Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. I do hope you're having a good day. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 63. Today, I had the immense pleasure to have Jan on the podcast today. I got to say, he calls himself a 5 to 9 entrepreneur, but this guy makes me feel lazy because this guy is on it. He is non-stop. Pleasure to have him on the podcast today. He had some really good conversation, and I look forward to getting him back on the podcast sometime in the near future. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Please subscribe and have a awesome day. Haha. Peace. Hey. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. I do hope you're having a good day. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Today on episode number 63, I am very privileged to have Jan Wilfred Toyon in today, who he is a, how can I say it? He is an author, activist, publisher, and how can I put it? General all-round nice guy. How are you today, sir?
Yes, I'm amazing. Thank you very much, Miwa. Thank you.
The pleasure's all mine. The pleasure's all mine. Yeah, I'm glad to have you on today. Yeah, you are, how can I put it? You make me feel lazy with the amount of work you do out there. And like, I've got to say it, like, yeah, just like project here, doing this, doing that. How do you find the time to get it all like squeezed in?
Well, that's the question. That's the golden question that I get asked all the time. You know, how do I get the time? Yeah. Because I'm also, I've gone back to teaching 2 years ago. So I'm a full-time teacher also. So in effect, I've become a 5 to 9 entrepreneur, you know. And so it's absolutely crazy. But you know what? To keep it very simple, I am well surrounded. I'm surrounding myself with fantastic people. I've got a small team that is very efficient, small, but very, very efficient. And, you know, I've got a very, very strong regiment and discipline, routine that I use for myself to be able to run everything.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Yeah, you also founded the EER. What is that? What does EER stand for?
Well, EER is kind of my personal brand, okay? Yeah. My personal advocacy brand. And it stands for empowerment, emancipation, and rehabilitation, okay? And these three terms are what define my mission all around. Mm-hmm. My career spans over 10 years of social entrepreneurship, activism, just general business. And so, as a social entrepreneur, these are the three terms that that kind of sum up everything that I do, okay? Every single aspect of venture or business that I've had has had that social aspect of it, which is to empower, to emancipate, and rehabilitate people.
Okay. And with regards to some of the, like, in the realms of empowerment, what would you say is, like, one of the key things you've been working on for people?
Empowerment wise, it all started 10 years ago with my project, educational project, the I'm Happy project. My aim was to create an education, an organic education, that would promote mental wellness and academic attainment for children in Western Africa. And so that's where the empowerment started from. I wrote an educational manual, and then, you know, that was basically the start of, you know, a 4 or 5 country in West Africa tour where the educational program has been established throughout the 10 years. And the project is still going on. Unfortunately, due to COVID, we've had to shut down our latest project, but which was one of my favorite projects. Oh. But, you know, these things happen.
Right. Well, what was the project about? Like,
Well, it's my favorite because it's called Every Boy an Achiever. And that was the actual year when finally we're going to focus on boy achievement in Western Africa, rural Western Africa, mm-hmm. where we're actually going to tackle the different aspects that young boys are faced with when it comes to education, when it comes to mental health. Because for the last decade or so, the emphasis has been put on girls. You know, it's been girl empowerment in Africa, you know, but and I feel that boys have been kind of left to the side a little bit, and they needed a bit of focus. You know, as we know in the West at the moment, there's a massive shift in masculinity and the way that we're seeing masculinity and, you know, just how manhood is being looked at. And I think that this shift is definitely needed on the continent. And, you know, I wanted to let that aspect permeate back to the continent through that wing of the project.
I know what you mean over here with regards to education in the UK. There is, especially for higher education, there has been much more of a focus on young ladies like coming through on different subjects as well. And like in some regards, some guys have been left behind with regards to the options of getting into higher education. I would imagine in some like West African countries, not all, but education is definitely something which would be harder to get in some areas. And if you've got more of a focus on one demographic, the other demographic is going to be left out and not be able to take full advantages of what the world has to offer.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm not negating the fact that boys have been a priority when it comes to education in Western Africa, well, on the African continent as a whole, because we know that, you know, the patriarchal nature of a lot of societies and boys being at the forefront, being the breadwinners and the future supporters of families. You know, I'm not negating that, but at the same time, what I'm trying to say with this project is actually what quality of men are we creating? You know, it's not just enough to give boys an education. What quality of men are we creating? Are we actually targeting their mental wellness? What's their mental health? What's the quality of their mental health? That's it. And so since my project has always been about mental wellness, this is that aspect, giving boys the tool and actually shining the light on that aspect of themselves that they've never at times had to think about or even explore. Because as you know, life in rural Africa is what it is. We just take, you know, they just take it for what it is and they just roll with it. And, you know, it's not until you come around and you actually sit down and talk and break things down, you know, they realize that actually, yeah, it's, things are tough. You know, there's difficulties and we just need to be able to look inwards to be better outwards.
That is the thing. I think with regards to sort of mental wellness, I think that's something which has been kind of neglected a lot through Western society, like through Africa. Like I think it's a case of if you went mental wellness when I was a lad over in Nigeria, if I went, yeah, mental wellness, people would look at me like, what are you talking about?
Absolutely. And you know what? I can relate to that because when I started the project 10 years ago in Francophone West Africa, which was my first target, because I'm partly from the Ivory Coast. You know, I'm French, Arabic, and from the Ivory Coast. I'm just kind of like a mix. I've grown up in partly in the Ivory Coast. The focus was absolutely, you know, it was some of the first conversations around this topic. And there wasn't even a term for it until recently. So I struggled to actually label what my work was. You know, I just couldn't find that mental health thing that, you know, people were starting to talk around here as well. 10 years ago, it was kind of starting, the term was starting to develop here. People were starting to bring it out and bring to attention and the awareness. And, you know, in Francophone West Africa, we didn't even have the term. So, you know, my project was kind of like the first, so in a lot of ways, I'm not saying that, you know, to start these conversations in rural settings where people were just like, oh, you're looking at not just the development, the academic development of the students, actually looking at their well-being. Yeah. So that's what we used in the beginning, the term bien-être in French, which means well-being.
Would you say there, like over here, like there is kind of like the stigma of mental health and well-being. There, like stigma still, it's not as bad as it was, well, say maybe 5 years ago, but that's how much it's come along. Would you say there is a stigma in West Africa with regards to mental like well-being? It was something they didn't have a word for, but when they sort of went, oh, I get what you're talking about, was there some type of stigma going around or anything like that?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, it was difficult. That's when the activism came in because, and it's crazy. It was absolutely crazy to think that there needs to be an activist dimension when it comes to talking about quality of education and mental well-being and mental wellness. But actually, there's a lot of encounters that I've had with certain officials in, you know, ministries of education and the government that have actually made me understand that it wasn't their priority. You know, that wasn't their priority. And I've even had, in a specific country, and I'm not going to mention the name, I've sat next to one of the inspectors for, you know, the education ministry that said to me that my educational program was not wanted in that country because it opened the eyes of the children too much. Okay, and that's the literal translation. It was because it's critical thinking, it's well-being, it's, you know, creative thinking. And they didn't want that because it opened the eyes of the children too much. And I think at that point, that's when I realized, because that to me was a micro thought, if you want, that kind of defines what the wider perspective is, you know, when it comes to our government. And that's when I kind of understood the dimension that actually, you know, we are being kept, you know, through education at a certain level where, you know, we're not necessarily wanted to emancipate. Okay, and that's when it changed for me, and that's when it stopped just being like an educational mission, and it became something a bit more political. Yeah, because, you know, I just felt that, you know, there was a purpose for what I was doing this, and I needed to fulfill that purpose and make sure that every child that I came in contact with, I could come in contact with, had this rehabilitation, this emancipation through the education that I was giving. To give to broaden their aspiration, because another aspect of this is the aspiration, because when you break somebody's aspiration, for, you know, by not giving them the tools for the right mental wellness or anything like that, then how can they ever self-actualize? How can they ever be a better version of themselves? How can they even imagine their life being different? You know, and so when I caught this vision, you know. Yeah, oh, the gloves came off, so to say. I said, you know what, I'm going to fight for this, and that's what it is. It's landed me in a lot of very sticky situations, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. You know, one of these was, you know, I got stuck in 2012 when the country of Mali was going through its division where, you know, Al-Qaeda would conquer the north. I was stuck there for four weeks. Oh. I was working in an orphanage. You know, couvre-feu, everything that you can think of. I've been stopped at borders, you know, being taken to warlords. Like, I've had all sorts of experiences because of the I'm Happy project.
Oh, my Lord. Warlord. Oh, come on now. Like, okay. Oh, wait. How many warlords have you met in your time?
No, it was fun because I think the difficulty with me is I was traveling with my French passport. So I'm a French citizen. And, you know, that was at the beginning when I wasn't quite wise to it. And obviously, they see a French passport. Wow. You know, like, it's a problem. So, you know, they think that you're spying because, and then it becomes a problem. So, I've been through my fair share of sticky situations. But I think I've always, because, you know, I'm not a horrible guy. You know, you don't look at me and think, oh, yeah, spy. You know, so I think.
Hey, but I don't judge.
No.
Hey, it's okay.
You know, I think, you know, so I think for these guys, you know, they just kind of took a look at me. They were like, oh, you know, he's just a young guy. He's just like, you know. So that's what works in my favor. I never really got in trouble. Right. But there was the scope for all sorts of things happening, you know. That's what I'm saying. But this is just how much I believed in this. Across territories that were almost at war, that was just for this, to reach certain communities, certain people, certain children. And yes, that's just how much I believe in it.
Yeah, no, like, I hear that, but come on now, like, I can't say my repertoire of people I know, warlord, into that. You know what I mean? That's probably a one-up on me. Well, two. Because, like, hey, can we meet this warlord? No. No, but still,
it was crazy.
Yeah, because, like, implementing something like this, you said, I believe, in six different countries on West Africa, that is a huge challenge in itself. And with the sort of varying different positions where some countries can be, trying to get that sort of, trying to maintain a clear, cohesive message must have been, like, proven challenging at times.
You know, the good thing about this is that, you know, I've always been hands-on with this. So, you know, the way that it worked is that, you know, I used to just go. spend maybe 4 to 6 weeks in the schools that we partnered with. Mm. And I was there to train the staff on my methodology. Okay. And that during that time, I literally bonded with the children, you know, and they called me Big Brother in their different languages. That's literally what it was. So I was Big Brother. I didn't come in as a teacher or as an organization. No, that wasn't it. And in the early days, I literally tried, it was me, just me going along, going to my host country, being taken to the schools, whatever, and just making friends, teachers, and whatever. And then by the time I left, the philosophy was established. Mm. And, you know, so, you know, it's the message could not have been diluted. And the spirit and the magic of the Oyomi Fair educational program, which is what it's called. Oyomi Fair stands for I'm happy in my native language, Baole language in the Ivory Coast. You know, you just can't. You know, that's the magic that, you know, you come in, set it up, and at the end of it, the program, you see the children just glowing, and everybody in the establishment just glowing, singing the theme song because there's a theme song that was created. You know, like it's a whole world. It's a world of positivity and color. So that couldn't have been diluted. The training aspect as well. There was a manuscript that was taken around, and you know what? I wasn't precious. I wasn't precious about, oh, you know, you guys are doing this. Like, no, because I've understood very early on. Mm. Now, every single community in Africa is different, okay? You know, and I never wanted to have that messiah complex either. Well, I came in and I was like, right, I'm going to show you how it's done. No. I always wanted people to bring their own source to it. Absolutely. I provide you with the material. You do what you want with it and how it works. As long as you've caught the magic, I was happy with that, you know. And you know, the different aspect about this is that actually, within 3 years of starting it, I stopped going through ministries of education. I did, because in the beginning I used to contact ministry of education. Oh, can you do this? Can you put me in touch with this? But after I had that encounter with that man, it was a very, very nasty encounter. So it lasted for like an hour, if you want, where he was just reprimanding me and this and that and threatening this and that. I just thought, you know what, I'm not dealing with ministries of education anymore. Because in the beginning, I wanted the Oyomi Fair educational program to be worldwide and to be like, wow, and this. But when I saw the reaction and, you know, actually practiced a lot of other ministry of education and saw how, what's the word, just how lax they were and just not interested in something so great, I just thought, you know what, stop you. I'm going to go directly to schools and, you know, to contacts that I've had in different countries, and they led me to certain schools. And that's how we did it from till this day.
Right. Now, yeah. Cut out the bureaucracy. And
no, absolutely. Because it wasn't advancing anything. It wasn't. You know, I mean, at the moment, we're established in the Ivory Coast, okay, which is, you know, my mother country to some extent. And, you know, the relations are a bit better because our family that are in positions of power in some places and things like that. So, you know, it's easier there. But am I looking to go back again and to approach Ministry of Education? You know what it's like in Africa. You always have to, you know, stroke people's egos and things like that. And I don't have time for that. I don't.
You say stroke people's egos in Africa. I think you need, like, when it comes to a politician, you need to stroke everyone's ego.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, and at this point, I just don't have the time for it. So, you know, we're moving steadily along. It's not a problem. You know, the greatest result that we got was last year, where, you know, our year six students excelled in their, what's the equivalent? 11 plus. They excelled in their 11 plus. Mm. They were the best school, the best result over 5 in the county, if you want, like 5 in the little county. They were the best. They outdid the national average as well. You know, so this is just how powerful this is. And you know, whenever we've had successes, they've been successes. And I'm talking like, you know, because all you need to do sometimes, and I'm not saying you need to come with the best textbooks and things like that. All you need is for that empowerment is to show children that you care. And not just that you care about, you know, anything, but you care about their well-being and their mental. Are you happy? Mm. You know, and that's one of the key questions in our mentoring program that I created. Are you happy? Talk to me about your happiness. What are the factors? Three factors that make you happy, three factors that don't make you happy. How can we find ways? You know, and the moment when you approach children like that, especially on the continent, yeah, it's amazing. And it transforms. So when they have the OMI Fair educational program every, you know, twice a week or three times a week,
yeah,
and then they go back to the exams and whatever, they absolutely smash them, you know. And there's you know, that there's no it's not juju. It's just what it is. The formula, winning formula,
hard work, commitment, and like, yeah, consistency. So
yeah, and just care and love, and showing lots and lots of love, because our children are confident, need love. I keep saying this, I say that all the time, they need love. Because, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, we're not loving our children, but we're not loving enough. We're not, you know, we tend to be too tough, you know, I find. We tend to be too tough with these children. And all they need sometimes is somebody to care and ask them about themselves and want to know about themselves and just show some love. It's simple. It's very simple.
Yeah, no. I understand. I agree with you because, like, yeah, with regards to the world today, and like basically how everyone's constantly busy flying around. Sometimes, yeah, kids are the sort of forgotten little like troops in that whole situation where it's like, I'm just, yeah, mom, dad, can you, yeah, I'm having to work, I'm having to do this, I'll get to you. But yeah, but.
Well, that's it. But the interesting thing is that I'm talking in rural, you know, Africa, you know. Children, a lot of children are, they're adults, you know, they have to work.
Mm.
They have to leave school, they have to work, they have to walk miles to go to the field, to the farm, to do this and that. They're breadwinners for the families, you know, so they're not really, a lot of them having that childhood experience, they're not. And that's what I'm saying. They need love. They need to have that time when they actually feel like children. And that's what the I'm Happy Project provided. You know, when I say that we have sessions like three times a week, that's what it is. So they come in, they do like an introduction activity. They learn from the, you know, from the a lesson from the educational curriculum. They maybe do like some catching up work from class. And then they have like song time, fun time, drama, play. And that's it, you know. It's that simple. So piggyback, you know, I piggyback from this, and you know, what I'm creating at the moment is the first center for mental wellness in my native province. You know, we're building that school facility at the moment. That was going to be my big reveal for 2020, but construction has been halted. It doesn't look like it's going to resume anytime soon. But this is what's happening. You know, the foundations have been laid, we're building it, you know, and that's like after 10 years of, you know, borrowing different centers from different places in different countries, not really feeling settled. Mm. I'm doing it in my native province, you know, and we are building this, you know. And once that's up, this is the first of its kind, the first center for mental health and mental wellness for children in the Ivory Coast. I can guarantee that today.
hey. So how many children will this be set up to help on a month or termly put like basis?
On the term, the way that it works is that, you know, we won't have like a capacity for everybody because there's a lot of children, but yeah, it'll be like on a rota basis, definitely. You know, so what we've set up is kind of like a multi-purpose building. Mm. That will be a massive classroom that will be split in two or three. It will also convert into a canteen, okay? So when it's not in use, at lunchtime it will be a canteen. And yeah, then when it's not in use, it's going to turn into like a study area. And then we'll establish a library. So it'll be a multifunctional building. And it will open on a rota system where, you know, X amount of kids will be able to come. We're still finalizing how much it can hold and things like that, and how many kids will be available based on the schools that we're going to be working with. But, you know, it's going to be that space for the children.
I see. So I take it this is going to be the prototype to see if you could roll this out through other areas, other countries throughout the sort of west coast of Africa.
That's good. That would be so amazing. It really would. It really would. But again, at that point, at this point where I'm at, you know, because I've, like I said, 10 years is a long time. You go through a lot of emotions. You know, you go through the fact where you're like, oh, yes, I want to conquer the world and this and that. And then you're all naive and young, and then all of a sudden your eyes are open to the reality. You're like, oh, actually, you know, maybe I need to rescale. And then you go back, and then you this. So at this point, I'm wiser. You know, I'm much wiser, much more realistic and objective with what actually can happen. So you know what? I'm starting in my native province, and that's beautiful. If people want to replicate it, then that's fine. I'm happy to assist them. But I'm not at this point going to go and beg. Mm-hmm. You know, people or educational systems, you know, ministries of education, my best friends, you know, I'm not going to go and beg them to say, you know, help us and this and that. No, you know, would I invest in, you know, building another center somewhere else? Yes, I would. But, you know, I need the people in the country and in the system to actually, you know, pull their finger out and actually do something. Because, you know, one of the criticisms that I can give myself is that I've done too much. I've invested too much and, you know, on me and not let other people, not that I haven't let them, but I haven't prompted them to actually take their responsibility when it comes to this.
So you basically, like, rather than sort of forming a team straight away, you've just basically taken the lion's share of the burden of making this.
Well, I guess because at the time, you know, when I used to come, people were just like, oh, you know, he's coming, okay, he's gonna do this, okay, fine, let him get on with it. And I was happy to do it, not understanding that, you know, it's a collaboration and that, you know, if there's educational foundations or, you know, bodies that are there that have funds.
Yeah.
That we join forces, absolutely. All these projects, the whole way that I've run this has been on my own funds. It's not been through grants or applications, none of that. This has been my own funds up until, yeah, now. Like, you know, the whole time, it's been my own funds. So, and that's the reason why I developed my other brands on the side. You know, I had this business model where it was like, you know, right, I'm going to have the I'm Happy project at the center. I'm going to have the publishing house, I'm going to have the clothing line, I'm going to have the food festival, I'm going to have this and that, the cooperative. And it's going to, you know, they're going to each contribute 50% or, you know, 40% or whatever, because it fluctuated throughout the years, into the project. That's how it was funded. Yeah. I didn't ask for help.
Yeah, like, because this is the thing. Yeah, with regards to doing, like, a publishing company, like, going from, like, having this, like doing this work with the schools, helping like with mental health in Africa, then basically then doing a publishing company as well. Like I know a little bit about publishing and like I know how labor intensive that can be. Like it's a totally different challenge altogether. So
it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what made you do that?
But for me, it's scale. Everything is scale. I'm not saying that I'm like Penguin Publisher. I'm not. I'm an independent publisher. And the way that I've been able to kind of scale things and make it manageable for me is that, you know, it's more of a writer's community / press. And we've created it's become a self-publishing service to some extent. Because in the beginning, we started to do books and things like that. And then it was a bit much. So I was like, you know what, how can I make this, you know, how can I rescale and things like that? And you know what, it's so much, you have to be creative. For things to be able to work in your favor, you have to be creative. So I thought, you know what, why don't we just become a self-publishing platform that will still carry the books that we've got, you know, that, you know, and if the author wants to give us X rights to the book to carry in the catalog, then we will. If they don't, they walk away with it. Then I don't have any marketing costs or anything like that, only for the books that I have and that I want to market, you know? So that's the smart way that I've been able to do this, you know, the publishing house carries on. And now it's entered into a new stage where we're focusing on magazines and publications. You know, we've got the Open Door Men's Magazine that started this year. We've got Grey Areas, that was what, 3 years ago. You know, I've got others coming up, you know, so it's ever evolving. And, you know, when you talk about business, when you talk about time and, you know, longevity, to me, it's about versatility. It equals versatility. I never wanted to be at the same stage that I was when I started, you know, the publishing house, I think 5-6 years ago, you know, I never wanted to be at that stage. Like I said, just talking just now, we've been through just selling books, producing books, selling them to self-publishing, to now just being like a press that deals with with interactive publications, as I call them. So it's been a journey. It's been a journey.
Wow. Like, this is a thing. Like, yeah, self-publishing, which I think is definitely a thing which is going to, like, it's getting bigger and bigger because more and more
absolutely
are, like, producing their own books and then, like, trying to get them out there. And, like, self-publishing has just been, like, how can I say it? A bit mental of late because, like, I've, like, yeah, oh, I've produced my own book. Like, one lady, she produced, it's quite crazy. In a month, she went, yes, I've produced the book. I was, like, going, what, a month? 275 pages. She was, like, yes, my book. There you go. And then she basically came back and she took 6 months for the other one because she had to work part-time as well. But still amazing, but getting that information out there. So,
And the interesting thing, the great thing, the reason why I love that model is because, you know, I can give anyone the opportunity to do it, you know, because publishing is expensive, you know. The independent publishers, even like the price, because, you know, the cost, you just have to make it cost efficient, you know. But I love of being able to give people that opportunity because, you know, we use Amazon, you know, it's easygoing, you know, there's no, you know, and then there's other ways for them to make a good revenue from it without you staying with Amazon, you know, because that's not a conversation. But, you know, it's that we advise them on, okay? But, you know, it's I love having this because I can just kind of, I can give...
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No,
I... Yeah, I can give people the opportunity to do this, you know, and publish their own book and, you know, and have a cross section of different people because it's not just, you know, is it my publishing is multicultural. Mm. I have all sorts of people, Black people, Asian people, you know, I've got all sorts of genres. I've got self-help, I've got energy practitioners, I've got, you know, academics, you know, it's a mixture. I love it. And I can give people that opportunity to do this at a nice, reasonable cost.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. So with regards to sort of like the self-publishing, but you moved to magazines as well. Mm-hmm. Why did you do the shift magazine? Why did you scale it up to have magazines as well?
Yes. So basically what was very interesting for me, so apologies. What I wanted to do is, I love the concept of magazines. I do. I love the concept of magazines because each one of our magazines is not just a magazine. Like Open Door, which is our newest baby, is a community because it's a men's magazine. It's a, you know, conscious man's magazine. So I was able to create this for my own experience as a man, wanted to have this mental health platform that was open for all sorts of men, whether they're gay, whether they're straight, whether they're this, they're that, this, is to bring people together to rewrite the male narrative. Okay. So we created a platform, we've got a YouTube channel, we've got a WhatsApp group, a social group now. So, you know, to me, that's what it's about. That's what publishing is about. It's not just a book. It's not just a book or a magazine. It's a community. It's how you create a publication. You create a community around it. And that's what the appeal was for me. Because the other thing that I love about this is that you can get different people. You can have different topics. It's ever moving. It's ever evolving. You can choose to go that direction today, that direction tomorrow. And that's what I love about magazines. They're so versatile. You know, a book... I have to say that I got bored of just providing books. I did. Because a book is just... You know, X amount of pages, a story, you read it, happy, close it, put it back. But a magazine is so much more excitement. Mm. That's just the way that I see it. And that's the appeal for me.
Yeah, like, I would say with a book, yeah, like it is a living thing, but it's a static living thing. With a magazine, it's always like the concept is the magazine, but it's always evolving and changing on a month to month basis. With each and every single issue, so yeah,
that's it. And especially the columnists.
Yeah,
I love selecting columnists. That's my favorite thing to do. Everybody's always like, but you never run. You seem like, because I probably have like 10 columnists magazine sometimes or even more. And people are like, but how do you get all these people? Because I love meeting people. And every time I meet a new person, I always go and I'm like, oh, I've got this magazine and that magazine. Oh. is there something that, you know, or if I know that there are specific training this specific thing, I'll be like, oh, do you want to write an article? You know, and that kind of stuff. So I'm never short of contributors. You know, I think it's one of the most exciting things to scope somebody out, get their story, and then have them write something beautiful that you can put in there. I love perspectives. That's what I always say when it comes to my publications. It's the perspective that people come from that I'm interested in. You know, what we say to me doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't. Mm. What's more important is the perspective that you come from, because it gives so much information about the person. It's almost as if your perspective is like your DNA imprint to me, you know? And so that's what I like to bring forward in my publications, to enrich and to empower people and, you know, yeah, to enrich people's view of the world.
Ah, excellent, excellent. You mentioned you do digital publications, interactive publications as well. How did you get into that?
I call my magazines interactive publications.
Right.
Because of the way that they come out.
Yeah.
And the way that, you know, they frequently come out, and the fact that there's a community. Uh-huh. They're all built around communities. Each magazine is a community, and it has people and lots of other branches that come out of it. That's what's interactive to me about it.
Got it. No problem. Yep. We had a little bit of confusion, but yes, we've worked our way through. Excellent.
That's fine.
No. I'm liking it. Once again, I've got to say, you make me feel quite lazy with all the amount of stuff.
Well, that's not the purpose.
I know it's not the purpose. I know it's not your intention, but dear God in heaven. Like, yeah, you are definitely going at it hard. Hard in the feet, as they say.
But don't forget, this is 10 years in the making. And I think that's what people forget. You know, people forget a lot of the time when, you know, I do things, they see things just like, oh, you know, like, you do so much stuff. And this, and I was like, well, no, this is 10 years.
Yeah.
Everything has had this place. It's been a journey. Mm. Everything has had this slot. Some has come in, some has gone, some have stayed, some have revamped, some have evolved with me, and some are still there. Some will still be there. And that's just the way it is. I'm a highly, highly creative person. I love, and I always say this, when it comes to career, when people talk about career, be as creative as you want to be, especially as an entrepreneur. Don't sit there and just have one thing, put all your eggs in one basket, or, you know, have all your hopes on one skill. Because, you know, anything can change. I mean, look at today, for instance, you know, this whole COVID thing. When it happened, prior to this, I was being slated, well, not slated, but, you know, just attacked, not attacked even, that's a strong word, but like, you know, what's the word? Criticized by people. They're like, oh, you know what? Oh, you know, you're not even a full-time entrepreneur now anymore. You do so many things, you know, how can you push a brand when, you know, you're just jumping to the next thing and things like that. And I'm always very gracious when people say things. It's fine. I listen and things like that. But then COVID happened and I lost. There was two businesses that just couldn't carry on in this climate. Mm. And I lost events and whatever else. And I was like, okay, fine. 2 weeks later, I got back up, dusted my shoulder off, and I brought back two of the businesses that could. And I made a profit in this time.
Wow.
So then I made a video on my social media and I said, oh, guys. I said, guys, don't underestimate. Because the thing is, what you don't understand is that people like me, and there's a few of us out there, have understood this, that you cannot sit there and be stagnant in one thing and just sit there and just be like, okay. Because life is ever changing. You can never, ever, ever know what's going to happen. I want to have these multiple brands. Even if one is dormant today, if it's not produced or things like that, it's there, okay? There's other things that are happening. This one stops for a minute. Because the new concept that I've got as well is the seasonal businesses. Like my clothing line, for instance, is a seasonal business. Mm. To make it manageable, it comes back every summer. So that gives me time to work on a collection, work on a publishing house, work on this and that. But, you know, I have that scope. So if something's not working today, I know that I've got two other things I can call on that will come back and make me some money. And that's literally what's happened at this time. So, you know, so it was basically a video of, I told you so, like, you know, who's laughing now, you know? And on top of it all, the criticism about being a 5-9 entrepreneur, I've got a wage coming in from my teaching job.
Yeah.
So, okay, so who's laughing now?
Hey, look, you're sitting pretty, you're laughing.
Right? Exactly. So yeah, you know, so it's all these things that, you know, I foresee before they happen.
Yeah.
I'm just a person, I just like to be prepared in life. I don't like any surprise, negative surprises or anything like that. I don't. You know, my wife is terrible. You know, she thinks I'm terrible for this, you know, because I'm always like, you know, preempting things and planning for things. I'm a project manager as well, you know. So of course, you know, I'm always planning for eventualities and things like that. Does that mean that I always get it right? No, there's a lot of failures that I've had as well. I've failed at a lot of things because, you know, they were not necessarily planned properly, or I just went too quickly at it. But I always have a plan B, C, D, E, as many letters as there are in the alphabet, I have plans. So even if there's a failure, I can always pick back up in another way.
Yeah. No, but this brings me back to my point. Yeah, you say 10 years in the making. Look, we all get time, and we live it through. Like, there are people which will use a year very, very, very effectively. 2, 3, 5, yeah. And then you've got people that could live 1,000 years and not do anything with that time whatsoever. But with the 10 years you've got, yeah, you have got.
I started at 25.
Yeah.
25, and now I'm, you know, 24, 25, and now I'm 34. You know, and that was it. It was about, and during that time, I got married. I've had 2 children, you know, because the other, a very important part of all this is being a father. That's my thing. Hence, I raise my children. You know, I call myself a full-time dad. Because I'm the dad that will come in from work, I'll be cooking, I'll be washing them, I'll be doing this. Like, this is it. That's the African part of my, you know, upbringing that I've got. I'm a very, very, you know, I'm a dad. So, you know, during all this time, and that's when I must admit that I had to take a break, because I had to really, reevaluate, you know, the things. So that's one of the reasons why I went back to teaching, because at one point things got really, really tough with the marriage, because I was gone. I was working too hard. We just started a family, the kids were small. And then I sat back and I thought, you know what, let me reevaluate. And then I thought, you know what, my priorities are there. There's no conversation, there's no back and forth thing. I need to scale back. And so let me go back to a full-time job that will give me that flexibility. Because that's what people don't realize with full-time employment. Because I'm not dissing. I see opportunities in everything. Full-time employment gives you that flexibility and that routine. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I know that I go to work. I start at, you know, 8:30. I finish at 4. Okay. When 4 is finished, I know I can get home, look after my babies, be with my wife, things like that. And then hit the, you know, the business stuff throughout. Okay, so that gives me that structure that I don't necessarily think I had before, because when you're an entrepreneur, a full-time entrepreneur like I was, you're never switched off. You're constantly on the phone. You're constantly, okay, I need to go, you know, and you get like 2 days notice. I need to go back to Africa for this. And then you're gone and this, and it just wasn't working, you know? And that's what people don't realize. They're just like, oh, you're living the life, but that's not it, you know? And I've had to be really mature about this, because, you know, a lot of men especially, we don't sit there and reevaluate our work commitments when things are difficult at home. We don't. That's the last thing we look at, because we're just like, well, hey, I'm providing, I'm doing this. They should be grateful that I'm doing this, and that's it. Yeah. But actually, sometimes we need to look at, you know, as entrepreneurs anyways, I'm not talking about like, you know, but as entrepreneurs, you know, you need to look at things, you know, how is it affecting your balance, your home stuff? Because I could sit here and do all these things, but if my home is not in order, then I have failed. Okay, this is how I feel about this. I have failed. And once I understood that, I thought, you know what, let me look at this. When it comes to big business and things like, and opportunities, I can always come back to it. Life is long, but I can't catch up with these. I can't take back, have these years back with my kids. I can't. They go so quickly, honestly, like it's just in a blink, you know? And I thought, you know, I can't get this back. So I'd rather spend the time now, whether it's like, you know, my early to mid 30s or whatever, working, and then catch up later. Like, it's, opportunities will never die out. I don't care what people say. People are always happy to say, no, you need to seize the opportunity now, or else you won't. Well, so be it. Let it go. There's something else that's around the corner. Like, you know, let's stop being so short-sighted. That's my thing, you know. So many opportunities.
No, like, some, like, I think something which will sit, I think, very true with you. I remember hearing Kevin Hart say this before he had his accident. He goes, yeah, he was married to his career, but he was dating his family.
That's it. And it's such an easy trap to fall into. Mm. That's the thing. It's such an easy trap to fall into. Because you once you've got that drive of success, that adrenaline of, oh, yes, and then things start to happen, they're actually positive. You start thinking, oh, gosh, this is great. And it becomes a drug. It does. You know, it is what it is. It becomes like an addiction. And before you realize it, everything else takes a back seat. Mm. And then the false pretense that you're under is that, well, actually, I'm achieving, and it's for you guys. It's for the family. It's for the greater good of the family. But actually, have you stopped and listened to what your wife is saying? Have you stopped to listen to what your children are saying? Because that's what we need to listen to. It's not what we're saying to ourselves. Because, you know, if they're not okay, we can't be okay. That's the way that I see it, you know.
No, I am loving it big time. No, because like what you say is very true, because like the messages are always there in plain sight. It's just a case of, are we actually open or have the vision to see those messages all around us? So it's
absolutely. And the sad statistic is that, I forget the exact number, but like the marriages for entrepreneurs, yeah, the statistic is actually quite drastic. I forget the exact number, but the rate of divorce for entrepreneurs is higher. It is, because it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, and I've been able to reconvert and things like that because I've got different things that I'm doing. I'm not saying that it would be easy for somebody who didn't, if it was just in that one thing and they had to work all hours under the sun to make that project work. Like, you know, I'm not negating that at all, but at the end of the day, like I keep saying, it's down to your priorities. You know, it's down to the priorities as a family as well, because some partners and some wives are happy to endure for the sake of, for the money, for the benefits and the profits and things like that, so they're fine. But you know, it's what works for anybody, for everybody, what the family priorities are, you know. And mine, for me, it's seeing the children grow, it's making sure that I'm there, I'm present. Not just there, I'm present, that I'm nurturing, and, you know, I'm seeing things I've done in my household. So, you know, that's what it was.
Yeah, no, like, this is the thing. I think most people, when they start up a business, they do, like, if you have that moment in conversation with them right there, like, oh, yeah, I'll be in control of my schedule. I'll be able to...
You're not. You're
you'll
not.
Be able to go this. I have spare time here and everything like this.
No. No, I find it crazy because when I first started, I used to have friends that started, you know, that they started way before. And they were like on the golf course and this and that. And they were like, yeah, well, the great thing about having my business is I have all this time to do.
Yeah.
And I used to sit there and I was like, that's interesting. And then once I progressed myself, I started to think, well, actually, no, that's a lot of rubbish. Like, okay, you can have, like, some time to do stuff, like, you know, but that's not the reality of it. You know, that's not, the reality is that you're constantly switched on. You can have a team. If you've got a massive team, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But if you, in the beginning, who's got a massive team? Nobody does, you know? 5 years, 6 years in, my teams came in, like, you know, recently, you know? In the beginning, you know, it was me and just two or three people and things like that, you know? I don't have this time to go and leisure it around. Mm. So that's what I'm saying. It's the perceptions that we're sold a lot of the time. And people don't realize it. The perception that you sell somebody will stick. And it will determine a lot of the way that they view their entrepreneurship, their journey, and things like that. But it's absolutely erroneous. It really is. You know, I think that we need to be real with people. And that's the approach that I take anyways. I keep it real, you know. It's tough. And that's the reason why I don't mind talking about the marriage trouble that I had 2 years ago, when, you know, things came to a head, and he was like, well, you know, you're working too much, you're this and that, we almost separated because of it. I don't mind saying this. And I'm candid about it because I'm trying to get people to understand that actually this is not always, like, it's not always cracked up to be. Like, success, it's not always cracked up to be. Like, how you're looking at it, you know, you need to shift that understanding of success, you know, and what your priorities are, and why, especially your why. I always talk about why. Mm. Your why. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing X, Y, and Z? Is it a vanity thing? Is it, you know, are you trying to prove something to yourself? Are you trying to prove something to other people? Until you actually understand your why and actually review it, yeah, you'll keep making stupid mistakes. That's the way that I see it.
Yeah, like, that's that price everyone has to pay, that sacrifice, it is a hefty toll.
It is, yeah.
And, like, yeah, fighting through, getting over those sort of road bumps in life which come along, like, if you can, it's great. It makes you stronger, makes you wiser. But yeah, there are many a person which has fallen by the wayside as well.
I'm not saying that it's easy. I'm not saying that it's easy, but we need to have foresight. Okay, you need to have as much foresight. Yeah, no, we're not gods. Okay, no, but we can have as much foresight and look, because we know each other. We know ourselves enough. Mm. When we look and we're like, okay, well, in this situation, I'm going to be like that. In this situation, I'm going to act like that. I'm going to react like this. Have the foresight to think, well, okay, well, you know, when this hurdle is going to come, I know really that I'm going to react like this. Mm. So what can I do to address that now? You know, what can I do to address this now so that it's not a problem in the future? Because that's the way that I think. Whenever I think about the future, I'm like, okay, well, I know what my response is going to be. I know what I'm going to, you know, be doing and things like that. But how can I make sure that it's not detrimental to me or the people around me? You know, and that's been a big part of my business approach. When I start, because what's interesting in my journey is that I started as a young 25-year-old. I was dating my wife at the time. So that journey has seen me from a young man that was single, if you want, that was going all over the place. I was getting my backpack, just going wherever I wanted.
Yeah.
To somebody that became married. So the commitment changed. And now being a dad, and that changed. So that journey saw me through all this and the adaptations and the different shifts. It's absolutely fascinating. When I look back and from this 25-year-old and things like that, it's fascinating. Lots of things have changed, but my why has remained the same. And that's what's kept me going all this time.
What is your why?
Well, that is something that is very deep, deep, deep inside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is something that I talk about. You know, I'm actually quite open about this. So everything stems from the I'm Happy Project, okay? My desire to help children, my desire to be with children, you know, to just make sure that children have that better life, you know, whether it's education, whether it's aspiration and things like that.
Yeah.
Because growing up in Africa, I experienced a childhood trauma where I was sexually abused. Okay, this is something that I talk about very openly now. Mm. And so once I grew up enough and I spoke to my parents and opened up and things like that, I said, you know what? I know that this happens regularly to young boys. We talk about girls all the time. Again, that's another, we talk about young girls and assault, sexual, but we don't talk about boys. And that, to me, is problematic because it happens to so many people, young boys. And in Africa, as we know, nobody will ever talk about anything that would compromise their masculinity. And so people grow up without saying anything because they were afraid. And actually, you know what? I put myself there because the moment I started talking to some people on the continent, that from the continent about this, yeah, they started looking at me differently. Yes, they started to kind of look at me sideways. They started to proceeded to tell me actually that doesn't happen. You know, some very painful things that were said back to me. But I said, you know what? That's your opinion and that's fine. But my why, and why I'm saying empowerment, rehabilitation, and emancipation, is that need to fight so that another child, another person doesn't have to sit there and suffer like I suffered. That's my why. Mm. And so when I see that permeates into everything that I've done, and it's taken different shapes. you know, yes, you can have that why, you know, to for justice and to make sure that for empowerment and nurturing and things like that. But the beautiful thing about this is that it turned me into a social entrepreneur without knowing. And so every aspect, whether it's my clothing line, I look at, you know, diminishing the environment. My clothing is upcycled, so it's like it's going against fast fashion. The publishing house is multicultural. It seeks to bring different narratives together and to put these narratives to the fore. I mean, I could go on. Every one of my enterprises has that thing, and all this was born from that experience. I just went and, you know, impacted in these different other ventures. And that's what I'm saying. The why is so powerful. And that's the reason why I can sit here today. So, you know, I can take a break from this and come back to it later. Because the why is too powerful. It's my reason for living. You know, to empower, to rehabilitate people, and to make sure that people have that view of the world and view themselves in the world as people, and as people who are worthy, you know, to be here. That's part of it.
Wow. Heavy and powerful stuff. And when I say heavy, I mean like, yeah, thought provoking. I should say. But yeah, whew. Got to say, like, this is the thing, like, with all everything you've gone through, all the things you've been doing right now, like, we haven't even touched on the sort of bioplantation, aspect of things, but yeah, we can get to that in a moment. But with all of this and like that driving you, and well, you still having that hunger from the age of, well, 25 up until now 34, it comes down to like, yeah, what sort of like, what do you think is going to be sort of next on the horizon for you?
Wow, quite interestingly, actually, recently I rebranded. Yes, I rebranded. It's quite interesting. Sorry, I'm just trying to plug my phone in before it dies. Okay, cool. Because, yeah, this our conversations are all... Okay, so, yeah, I think it's in. Sorry, I'll just check. Okay. Sorry, I'm back. So I rebranded recently, you know. I think after 10 years of doing lots of really hard-hitting stuff and things like that, I started to rethink about the different things that I'm doing and things like that. So my enterprises are carrying on, the ones in Africa, the Amapi project and whatever else, but I've taken a bit of a detour. And I'm focusing on the fashion and beauty industry now.
Okay.
It's crazy to some people, but it's not. Because in my 20s, my early 20s, I was a fashion model in Paris. Mm-hmm. A model for Hugo Boss and, you know, whatever else. But it was a gap year thing. That's the thing. So it's something that I did for 2 years. Okay. I know, it never ends.
That was a gap year thing. Just like modern.
It was a gap year. I always wanted to do this, but my parents said, okay, fine. You know,
okay,
we'll let you do it, but you know, we only do it for gap year. And whatever happens, you need to go back to your studies afterwards. So I was like, okay, fine. So I did it. It was fantastic for the most part, but you know, obviously there's a lot of challenges that come with that, you know. But it's always been a regret on mine because I love to overachieve and stuff. And, you know, I regretted the fact that I didn't carry on. So this year, after turning 34 in May, something clicked. And I thought, you know what? Okay, maybe it's the right time to go back because I need to have fun in my life. I need to have really, you know, good thing, you know, lighthearted, you know, just a bit lighthearted. So I rebranded, you know, I'm a brand ambassador for a lot of different skincare or cosmetic brands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm using the rest of this year to get my body in shape and whatever else to join, you know, the modeling industry next year again. Yeah. Now, this is something else that I'm going to be doing, but on top of everything that I've got and the team that is looking after these things. So that's fine. So I can manage that.
Okay. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, carry on, please. So
it's, yeah.
Okay. So, right. So, serial entrepreneur, left, right, and center, like doing like, yeah, great things, like, yeah, building a school, like, for mental health in, like, in Africa, back in your home province. Then, like, basically publishing books, magazines, number of magazines, like, yeah, 3 to 4 magazines. Then, like, yeah, your bio, like, plantation, as well as, like, a clothing line. And now you're looking to, like, get back into the world of modeling once again, as well. So, yeah, you're rebranding to become a model again. Yes. Okay. As well as being, I almost forgot these key things as well, as well as being a teacher.
Husband. it sounds
father of two. Wait. Have I?
It sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, Okay, how did you get this time? Okay, what is your secret?
No, but the thing is, the interesting thing is, a lot of these things are hobbies of mine to start with.
Okay.
You know? So, you know, when I talk about the publishing house that I've created, it's, you know, I started out writing myself. So I've got 2 books that I published. That's how it started. And I started inviting different people. Like, everything's been like an organic process. It's not just been like, okay, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's been like over a period.
Yeah.
A period of 10 years where, you know, different things grew into what they are. You know, so even the clothing line, it started with me, like, you know, because I learned how to sew and things like that in the modeling industry. So, you know, this is something that I've always loved, you know. So I started like designing the prototypes. It was, you know, it wasn't up to scratch or anything like that. And then even our first show that we did, we won the award the first year, the Afro Roots show in Oxford. It was my prototypes. You know, some of them were falling apart, like on the road. Some of them are running, yeah, literally. But you know, but we won. So you know, it's been a process. All these things are my hobbies. And so when it comes to like me saying, I want to get back into, I'm doing the cosmetic. It's fun because I love taking care of myself. You know, I love, you know. So when brands are sending me their stuff, I'm loving it. I'm sitting here like, you know, trialing, playing around, like. You know, and then they're gonna send me some clothes as well. I'm gonna play around. This is fun for me. That part is fun, you know, straight up fun. But fun where you make money from it. So it's not just fun, it's good fun, you know.
I mean, like if you can get a little bit of change from it or
absolutely, or more, you know, so
I'm gonna argue with you because they
because the other thing is I'm an opportunity, well, not an opportunist because that sounds wrong, but you know, I look for opportunities in everything. So as much as I'm saying, you know, I want to, you know, I'm like in brands, I'm representing brands and things like that, I'm looking at the, you know, the growing $1 billion industry that is men's grooming. Okay, I'm looking at it from my angle. That is it's a new market, exciting and booming market. So of course I want a slice of that. So let me see what I can create in the long run. So it's not, everything has got something, you know, attached to it when it comes to me. You know, I see the opportunity, I see where the gaps are, and I go in and I create something. You know. So it's not just, it sounds crazy, but it's, yeah, I say I'm driven by opportunities. I am.
So with regards to men's grooming, what do you think it's going to, do you have an idea what might be your thing, or is that something you're still trying to devise?
Oh, no, I've already devised it. I'm in talks with people already.
You know what? I'm out. I'm gone. okay, right. I've already got that next thing sorted.
Yeah. Listen, that's the reason why I don't have this. You know what you said to me? Oh, you know, I just want to talk about everything that you've done. I thought, you know, it's good, but are you ready for that?
I'm ready. Like, look, put it this way. You're like, look, let's not say, like, one of us was like, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes. You know, like, I was like, no. Here we are still talking away.
You know, that's the reason why I always ask for talking points, because then I can structure what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But if you want a free flow conversation, like, you're going to get a lot.
Like, this is the reason why I like doing, like,
I mean, that's good.
Doing these podcasts. No, not even like, love doing these podcasts. Because, like, when I do my podcast, as I said to you before, I like having it open, like, so a free-form, like, conversation can happen. Because all I've got to say is that when you, if it was structured and I was, like, going, question one, question two, three, if, like, by all means, we've got certain information, but the sort of like more detailed nuances of that conversation.
That's it.
It would have been lost. It would have been missed.
Absolutely. But that's the reason why I personally just asked, because there's so many aspects that, you know, in the beginning, you know, I say that it's a weakness. I don't like using that word, but people see it as a weakness because they're just like, well, we can't box you in. You know, how many times I've approached PR people, it's crazy, ridiculous. And they were like, okay, so what is it that you do? So I run through everything and I'm just like, actually, I can't represent this. It's too much. Like, I've had 3 PR people that have turned me away. So it's quite traumatic in the way, because it's just like, well, you know.
this is a thing. Surely that's a good thing. If no one can box you into like going, you're this person, or you just do A, B, and like D, but like you're like, oh yeah, okay, you're this.
That's
person.
That's it.
It's like going, okay, that definitely shows that you like you've got a high degree of focus. You are ambitious, and like you know what I mean. You're not actually sitting on your backside like going, if only, or I wish, or I should have, I could have, I would have.
No. That's not me. That's not me. If I get it, I have to do it. You know, it's not, I hate regrets. That's the one thing that I absolutely, you know, if I want to get to my, whatever age I'm graced to, and look back on my life and think, you know what, Jan, you've done everything that you wanted to do. Absolutely, because you only get one life, goodness sake. When you know, and that comes back to the trauma, you know, it comes back to this. When you've been in a situation where you almost died, where you almost felt like you were not going to make it, or when you've just got, and you've been through actually getting to the point of suicide, and then you snap out of it, you look at life, and you're like, no. I've got to make this count. I've got to make every day count and everything that I'm doing count, because it's a waste of life. It's a waste of time. So that's the reason why I'm like this. That's the reason why I'm just insatiable when it comes to like, you know, different things that I want to do. If I want to do, if I have interest in it, if I have the means, if I've got the time, absolutely, you bet you I'm going to do it. Because I don't want to sit there and look back and think, I didn't really do this justice. Or I didn't like, you know, and that's what I'm saying. I've been feeling like that about modeling for a long time. Because I was a bit mad at my parents. Because you know, parents, you know, they're just like, oh no, you need to get this. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do it. But if you leave me in that industry, I'm going to thrive. I know this. Okay, I knew this. I was going to thrive. But fine. But I had that regret, and I came back to it. I'm 34. You know, most people are just like, but your husband, your dad, how's your wife? I don't care. I want to do it.
I see you glance to the side. You're like, yeah, my wife. I don't care.
Well, no, I'm not glancing. No, she's my biggest supporter, actually. She's my biggest supporter. And that's why, you know, it's amazing, you know, because she understands. She understands what I need and the things. Like, so she's very great like that, you know. But, if I have a regret, you better believe that I'm going to go back and address it. You know, so I don't like to live life, you know, half lived. I don't.
Yeah, no, like this is the thing. Yeah, having that type of clarity is a very sort of powerful thing and a very sort of motivating thing. And like I would say, the vast majority of people don't have that clarity. Like they sort of, if something happens in their life where they lose a family member or like they lose a close friend or someone they love, they get that clarity for a brief moment. And it sort of fades away because other things in life, like we don't want to think about the sort of the finite nature of life itself. But yeah, you're making the most of it. Like, yeah, good God. Once again, making me feel lazy. But yeah, like with the bio plantation, what is that about?
Well, so another chapter. So yeah. Oh, hey. But I inherited my grandparents, you know, the Ivory Coast is heavily, we're the first producer of cocoa in the world, okay? Mm-hmm. Chocolate, something. And so that's just part of our wealth, our generational wealth. So I inherited some land that was cocoa plantation and things like that. I ran with it for a few years and then the price of cocoa starts to decline. Okay, and then I started to read up on the different, you know, the world focuses on bringing back, bio is the French word for organic, if you want, bringing organic, you know, farming methods and environment, extra climate change and things like that. So I said to myself, as much as I love this, and this is like, you know, it's ancestral, it's whatever, and this is what we've been given, I don't agree with the fact that, you know, cocoa plantations have been so responsible for deforestation in a lot of Western Africa. Now we know the southern part, the belt, you know, the southern belt of West Africa is the lushest place in the world. It is. It's always been. But intensive farming and agriculture and, you know, mass crop development, things like that, such as cocoa, rubber trees, all these massive, massive, large scale, palm oil as well is becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually killing our natural ecosystem. The use of pesticides is actually, you know, killing our soils, killing the fertility, eroding the land. And, you know, we are the first ones to feel the effects of climate change because the Sahara is receding. So I looked at all this and I thought, you know what, this is great. It's a great thing. But let me flip the script on this one because I don't want to continue to feed into that trade. I don't. And anyways, the Western market controls the prices anyway, so I don't see the emancipation there. So I reconverted. I got a new site. I think it's 200 acres at the moment that we've turned, you know, with my parents. You know, I'm associating myself and my parents for this. And we've turned it into an organic plant. Or farm. So it was, you know, the area used to be a farm in the 70s where they didn't use pesticides before. And then I think in 5-6 years into the farm thing, they stopped and it was just left like that. It was left dormant. It's in our same province and things like that. So we went, we reclaimed it, so at the moment it's organic farming. So we're planting, we're doing cash crop. We're doing bananas, moringa. Moringa is also another thing that we're doing. We started some palm oil as well, but organic. Everything on there is organic. And we're leaving, I think, 50%, 40 to 50% that is going to be natural virgin forest that we're going to use for ecotourism. And the other part of this is there's maybe 20% that is going to be used for a tree replanting project. So yeah, so there's lots of different developments there that we're working with, but that's like a 10-year project. So at the moment we're planting, you know, we're creating the farm and things like that. But, you know, as of next year, I'm going to start going to scope and then we're going to start the tree planting project. That's my baby. That's the thing that I love the most about this, the tree planting project, the reforestation project, because I love it. I love it.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
So that's it. That's it with that. Yeah.
No, like this thing with the palm olive oil. I'm sure, like, I'm not saying that might be tying into one of your things with regards to fashion, perhaps.
Well, you know, we've got oils. Yeah, we produce oil. Why would I go and source this elsewhere if I needed it for cosmetics or things like that? You know, so I'm trying to look, you know, and see how, you know, I can minimize my own costs when creating things. So we'll see.
Ah.
But you know, it's I just everything that I do, I just want to impact the environment as little as possible. You know, it's a massive, it's a problem. It's a pandemic, if you want me to, if I can use that word. That, you know, in the countryside in Africa, a lot of the time people are just like, oh yeah, food is still organic, but it's not. It's not. The amount of pesticides that are used in our foods in the countryside is absolutely crazy. And now we're seeing the rise in, you know, heart problems, blood pressure, you know, things that were never a problem in the countryside, in the rural side. This is absolutely crazy. And it's until, you know, and it will take for a lot of campaigns to happen to make farmers realize that actually what they're pumping into their soil is actually what's making them ill. You know, we started having these conversations with a lot of farmers, you know, it takes a while for them to understand and to get that. But it's because to them, it's like, oh, well, the white man brought it, so it must be good. It's like, well, no. You know, the way that you guys used to do it in the 70s, because the pesticides came in around the 80s, a bit late 80s, But anything before that was fine. Like, it was actually organic. It was healthy. It was fine. But anything after that, yeah, no, it's pure destruction. So, you know, it's about education again.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another thing, you know.
I'm sure with your help and like your like insight into it all, I think you'll make a real big difference. Like I've got
this,
with all the things you're in, like all the projects you're involved in, I think, yes. Great changes. You're on the crest of the wave of it, sir. On the crest of the wave.
Yeah, you know, we're trying. It's not always, like I said, it's not always smooth. It's not always easy, but you know, I'm anchored in this mission, and this is what I'm there to do. So, you know, yeah, I'm always going to be doing. I'm always going to be working. That's why I'm saying this is not just business orientated. It's not just a business. I'm not looking at it like, you know, a profit maker or anything like that. No, because when I started this, there was no profit. It was just me, my funds, and, you know, that was it. So that mindset has not changed. It's the same. You know, we may expand and do this and that, and this, but the actual core of it remains the same. You know, let's make as much change. Let's make as many improvements as we can. That's what it's about, especially in Africa. My heart is buried, you know, it's buried in my province, my native province. It's everything that I'm doing here. Yeah, okay, it's fine. You know, I'm impacting in different communities, but my greatest impact, yeah, it has to be on the continent. Absolutely. You know, the diaspora that we are, you know, we've spread to different countries and, you know, in the West, in the Americas. To me, what's important is that we need to look back. We need to look back home, because that's where we need to take what we learn and pour back. Because if we don't, nobody else will. Nobody else does. So, you know, that's why my mission is what it is.
Perfect. Yes, we're going to end it there. But what I want you to do is basically tell the lovely people out there how they can reach you. Like through the different social medias and like whatever. Yeah.
How, oh gosh. That's a bit tricky though. I mean, is it something that you can drop at the bottom of the, I can send you the.
You can tell I'll always put the links and everything.
Okay. I'll do that. That's easier that way. Yeah. That'll be easier that way.
Okay. No problem. All the information to get in contact with Yam will be in the show notes. So feel free to get in contact with him. Twist his ear about this, that, the other. Yes, I will get him back again. Talk about maybe how you can sort of get started with this, the whole entrepreneurial bug. And
yeah. Absolutely. I'd love to talk about that. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. He's coming absolutely back.
And yes, no, I love this. I love the vibe. I love it. This is great. That's why I wanted to get it done today. I didn't want to push it anymore. It's great. It's easygoing. It's nice. We extracted a lot. So it's great. Love it. I'm a fan.
Oh, there you go. Boom. I've got another fan. It's great. Yes, thank you very much for coming on today, sir. We'll get you back on definitely in the near future.
No problem.
Awesome. And I'd like to say thank you to all of you who are still watching, listening right now. Thank you, my friends, my life warriors. I wish you a safe day, a great day. Be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be
absolutely
what you can be in this world and more.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I say goodbye to you, and yeah, fantastic. Peace.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye now.